ashamed of how afraid I am of a simple small book. I don't think I can, I whisper, barely audible. Julian offers no quarter, no comfort. He stands back, crossing his arms. He doesn't need many words to scold me. Well, you need to, he says simply, taking on the air of a teacher again. Not just for yourself, but for the rest of us. All of us. I don't see how the diary of a dead woman can be any help right now. Well, hopefully you summon the courage to find out. Reading it feels like pushing a stone through mud. Sluggish, difficult, foolish. The words pull at me with inky fingers, trying to hold me back. Each page is heavier than the last. Until they aren't. Until the stone is rolling down a hill, and the voice I give my mother rings in my head, speaking as quickly as my mind allows. Sometimes my eyes blur. I don't stop to wipe the tears from the pages, letting them mark the hours as the night passes. Sometimes I find myself smiling. My mother liked to tinker with things. Repair and build. Just like me. Sometimes I even laugh. The way she talks about Julian, their kind rivalry, how he gave her books she would never read. I can almost trick myself into thinking she's alive. Sitting next to me instead of trapped in a book. But mostly I feel a deep ache. Hunger for her. Sorrow. Regret. My mother had her demons. Just like the rest of us. Her own pains that began long before she became a queen. Before my father married her and put a target on her back. Her entries grow scarcer as time wears on, as her life changes. There are only a few pages dedicated to me.
He will not be a soldier. I owe him that much. Too long the sons and daughters of House Calore have been fighting. Too long has this country had a warrior king. Too long have we been at war, on the front and also within. It might be a crime to write such things, but I am a queen. I am the queen. I can say and write what I think. The Calores are children of fire, as strong and destructive as their flame, but Cal will not be like the others before. Fire can destroy, fire can kill, but it can also create. Forest burned in the summer will be green by spring, better and stronger than before. Cal's flame will build and bring roots from the ashes of war. The guns will quiet, the smoke will clear, and the soldiers, red and silver both, will come home. 100 years of war, and my son will bring peace. He will not die fighting. He will not. He will not.
I run a finger over the letters, feeling the press of a faraway pen. This isn't her handwriting, but Julian's. Her real diaries were destroyed by Ilara Mirandis, but Julian had the wherewithal to preserve something before they disappeared. He painstakingly copied each letter. Even these. He nearly put a hole in the page writing those words. They certainly put a hole through me. Corianne Jacos wanted a different life for her son, entirely separate from how I was raised and who my father made me into. I have to wonder if there is some fate in between what each of my parents wanted for me, a path that is truly my own to choose. Or is it simply too late?
31. Maven. I am not even afforded a window. At least I gave Mare one, when she was my prisoner. Of course, that was a torture as much as anything else. letting her see the world pass, the seasons change, from behind the bars of her opulent cage. I don't think this is quite as personal an affront. Clearly they will take no chances with me. My flame maker bracelets are long gone, probably destroyed. There's silent stone set in the floor, dulling any ability I have left. I'm watched night and day by no less than 12 guards, each one alert and ready on the other side of cell bars. I'm the only person being held here. No one speaks to me, not even the guards. Only Mother whispers to me still, and those words are ever fleeting, growing dim, leaving me with my thoughts. It's the only benefit of Silent Stone. While it weakens the rest of me, it weakens her voice as well. I felt the same thing on my old throne. It was a shield as much as an anchor, making me ache, but also keeping me insulated from influence, both within and without. Any choice I made in that seat was mine alone. It's the same here. I choose to sleep, mostly. Even the stone won't allow me to dream. It can't undo whatever she did. Mother took that ability away long ago, and it never came back. Sometimes I stare at the walls. They're cool to the touch, and I suspect were partially underground. I was blindfolded when I was led into the city and brought to speak before that strange council. I must spend hours tracing the lines of mortar and cement holding the slabs together, running my fingers over rough and smooth textures. Normally, I'd talk out my thoughts to myself, but the guards are always there, always listening. It would be more than stupid to give them any glimpse, however small, into my mind. Cal is alone, cut off from his strongest allies. He did it to himself, the fool. Iris and her mother won't waste much time, or give him the opportunity to try to stabilize the kingdom. He got that crown he wanted so much, but he won't keep it long. I smile to think of my perfect brother perfectly ruining things for himself. All he had to do was say no. Turn aside the throne. He'd have his armies. He'd have a chance. He'd have Mare. But even she wasn't enough for him. I guess I understand that. She wasn't enough for me either. Enough to make me change, to pull me back from what I've willingly become. I wonder if Thomas would have been enough. As usual, this splitting headache comes whenever I think his name, or remember his face, or feel his touch on my hands. I lie back against the cot in the corner, pressing my fists against my eyes, trying to relieve the pressure of the memory and this place. I know less than I should about Montfort, let alone its capital, Ascendant. Even trying to plan an escape from here would be a waste of my time and limited energy. Of course, I'll take my chances in Archeon, lose them in the tunnels after setting another army on my brother. The last revenge of Maven Kalor, before I disappear. To where, I don't know. It's just another waste to try to plan beyond Archeon. I'll cross that bridge when it comes. Certainly Mare will suspect. She knows me well enough by now. I might have to kill her at the end of this. Her life or mine. A difficult choice, but I'll choose myself. I do it every time. We need to know where to enter the tunnels. At first I wonder if I'm actually dreaming, if that piece of my mother has finally been washed away. But that's impossible. I open my eyes to see Mare standing on the other side of the bars, far enough to be out of reach. The guards are gone, or at least out of sight, probably gathered at either end of the corridor, ready to be called upon if necessary. It's been 2 days since I was summoned to the Premier's council, and she doesn't look like she's slept since. The Lightning Girl is worn, with shadows beneath her eyes and cheekbones. Still, she looks better than she did when she was my prisoner, in spite of the gowns and jewels I kept her in. Her eyes spark here. She isn't hollowed out, aching to the bone. I know that sensation intimately. I feel it here now. And I felt it when I was a king, shielded by a silent throne. Slowly I rise up on my elbows, peering at her over the toes of my shoes. 2 days to agree to my terms, I say, counting off on my fingers. Must have been quite the argument. Careful, Maven, she barks out the warning, all rough edges. Any difficulty and I'll be happy to call Titan down here. The other new blood who shares her ability is a stranger, with his white hair and inscrutable eyes. Stronger than me, she said back in the council, and I have seen such strength from Mare Barrow. Certainly his lightning will shred me, nerve from nerve. Not that it will help them. I can withstand torture. I know how to keep my mouth shut, even if it means dying. Still, I don't fancy being turned into a light bulb this early in the day. No, I'd rather you didn't, I answer her. I do so enjoy our time alone. Her eyes narrow, dancing over me. Even at a distance, I can hear her sharp intake of breath. I smirk a little, satisfied that I can still draw such a reaction from her, even if her response is firmly rooted in fear. That's something, at least. Better than apathy. Better than nothing at all. I suppose this is the end of that, I continue, swinging my legs out and onto the floor. The metal is cool against my forehead as I lean, bracing myself against the bars. No more whispers between Maven and Mare. She sneers, and I brace myself for the inevitable spray of spit. It never comes. I'm done trying to understand you, she hisses, still out of reach. But she doesn't flinch when I look her over, doesn't tremble when I raise a hand, stretching out my fingers to brush within an inch of her face. But it isn't me she fears, not really. Her eyes flicker, looking down at the floor of my cell, at the stone set neatly in cement. I laugh, deep in my throat. It echoes off the walls. I really did break something in you, didn't I? Mare recoils like I've struck her. I can almost see the bruise forming on her heart. She grits her teeth, straightening her spine. Nothing that I can't fix, she grinds out. I can feel the smile on my face turn bitter, tainted, corrupted. Like the rest of me. If only I could say the same. My words echo, soften, and die. She crosses her arms and looks at her feet. I watch her keenly, trying to commit every piece of her to memory. The tunnels, Maven. You heard my terms, I reply. I go with you. I lead your armies. Her head snaps up. If not for the stone beneath my feet, I might feel the hum of static. That isn't good enough, she says. Time to call her bluff. Then electrocute me. Call your torturer and risk your war on the words bought with my blood. Trust that they're the truth. Are you willing to do that? She throws up her hands, exasperated. Like I'm a child instead of a king. It rankles, sandpaper on my skin. We need a compromise, at least. Where the tunnels start. I raise an eyebrow coolly. And where they end? That's your piece of the puzzle to keep. Until we need it. I hum out, tapping a finger to my chin. I even start to pace, putting on a grand show for my rapturous audience. Her eyes track my movements, and I'm reminded of the panther Evangeline's mother keeps so close. I assume you'll be coming along. She barely scoffs, her mouth curves into a delicious scowl. It isn't like you to ask empty, stupid questions. I just shrug. Whatever keeps you standing here. To that, she has no retort. Whatever words she wants to say die on her lips. If only I could touch them. Feel the skin beneath my fingers, smooth and full and pulsing with hot, red blood. Part of me wonders why she is still so transfixing, even though I know she's my sworn enemy. That I would kill her, and she would kill me. Another mystery of my mind that will never be unraveled. She stands firm, letting me look, never wavering beneath my gaze, letting me see past the mask I helped her make. There's exhaustion, and hope, and sadness, of course. A sorrow for so many things. My brother among them. He broke your heart, didn't he? Mare only exhales, her chest falling. What a fool, I whisper, speaking the familiar thought aloud. It doesn't bother her. She tosses her head, letting brown and gray hair flip over her shoulder, revealing the bare skin beneath, and the brand still clear as day. M for Maven, M for Mine, M for Monster, M for Mare. So did you. A sour taste floods my mouth. I expected her to quail, but I'm the one who has to look away. At least I had a good reason, I mutter. Her laugh is sharp and harsh, a single bark that snaps like a whip crack. He did it for the crown, I hiss. Mare leers at me, but never moves her feet, never gets close enough to touch. And you didn't, Maven? I did it for her, of course. I try to sound detached, matter of fact. The cold, broken, doomed Maven. And what she made me into.
You keep blaming your mother. I suppose that's easy.
My heart leaps in my chest when her feet slide, moving sideways, not closer, not farther. Now it's her turn to prowl.
You think Cal's father didn't make him into something too? You think we all aren't made or unmade by someone else?
Even though she's only walking, it feels like a dance. I mirror her movements, stepping with her. She's more graceful than I am. A live thief born of many years and many twists of fate.
But we all still have the ability to choose in the end. And you chose to keep the blood on your hands.
My fist clenches, and I wish for a spark, for flame, for something to burn. She knows what I want, and grins to herself. On the other side of the bars, her fingers tap against the air, alight with purple and white. The electric energy is a tease at best. Beyond my reach, beyond the sphere of silent stone, I ache for my ability the way I ache for Mare, for Thomas, for who I was supposed to be.
At least I can admit when I'm wrong, she continues. When I make a mistake. When the horrible things I've done and will do are my own fault.
The sparks reflect in her eyes. They shudder from brown to purple, giving her an unearthly look, like her gaze might run me through. Part of me wishes she would.
I suppose you taught me that.
Instead, I grin again. Then you should thank me properly. She responds in kind, spitting at my feet. At least some things in this world are still predictable. You never disappoint, I hiss, scraping my shoe against the cement floor. She doesn't waver. The tunnels! Heaving a breath, I pretend to be so desperately put upon. I make her wait, letting the silence stretch for several long, blistering moments. I take the time to look at her. To see Mare Barrow for who she is right now. Not who I remember. And not who I wish she could be. Mine. But she doesn't belong to anyone. Not even my brother. I take comfort in such a small consolation. We're alone together, she and I. Our paths may be horrible, but they're the paths we made for ourselves. The golden glow of her skin is warm, even down here, illuminated by the harsh light of fluorescence. She is so stubbornly alive, still burning like a candle fighting against rain. Fine. I give her what she wants. I think it's what I want, too. Their plan was always to kill me, after I ceased to be useful. I'm not surprised. It's what I'd do. Still, when the cloth is pulled off my head, revealing the mountains bold around us, I can't help but feel afraid. If I'm allowed to see this place, see Montfort and its capital, then I am well and truly dead. It's only a matter of time. The air is cold, biting at my exposed face. My shivers of fear are more than warranted. I blink up at the purple sky, hazed before dawn, streaked with the light of a distant sunrise creeping over the mountain peaks. Snow clings to the heights, even in summer. Quickly, I try to get my bearings. The city of Ascendant reaches into the valley below, sweeping over the slopes to an alpine lake. It doesn't remind me of any city I've seen, not in Norta or even the Lakelands. This place is too new, but somehow old at the same time. Grown among the trees and the rocks, a part of this strange land as much as a human-built place. But the city doesn't matter. I'll never come back here. Not if I escape, nor if they execute me. There is simply no reality where I return to Montfort. We're standing near a runway, cut evenly between two mountains. The smell of jet fuel is sharp on the otherwise fresh air. Several air jets line up on the paved straightaway, ready to take flight. I squint over the heads of the guards around me, glimpsing a white palace in the distance, looking down at the capital. That must be where I was taken before, when I was dragged before that strange council of reds, silvers, and new bloods. The faces hemming me in are unfamiliar, their uniforms equally split between Montfort Green and the hellish red of the Scarlet Guard. They keep me locked in place, unable to do much more than stand on my toes for a craning look at the crowd. For this is certainly a crowd. Dozens of soldiers and their commanders, organized into neat lines, wait patiently for the jets. But far fewer than I expected. Do they really think this is enough to assault Archaon? Even if they have new bloods of strange and terrible abilities, this is foolish. Suicide. How did I lose to such rampant idiots? Someone chuckles nearby, and I'm seized by the familiar sense that they're laughing at me. I turn sharply, only to see the Premier of Montfort himself staring between the shoulders of my guards. With a gesture of his hand, the two soldiers move, allowing him to approach. To my surprise, he's dressed like a soldier, unremarkable in a dark green uniform. No medals or honors on his breast, nothing to mark him as the leader of an entire country. No wonder he and Cal got along so well. They're both stupid enough to fight on the front lines. Something funny, I sneer, looking up at him. The Premier merely shakes his head. As in the council, the man keeps his face still and almost empty, showing only enough emotion to allow an audience to project their own assumptions. I would congratulate him on the talent if I felt so inclined. Like me, Davidson is a skilled actor. But his performance is wasted. I see through him. What happens when this is over, and the time comes to divide the spoils? I smile, the air freezing against my teeth. Who picks up my brother's crown, Davidson? The man doesn't flinch, seemingly unaffected. But I catch the minuscule twitch as his eyes narrow. Look around, Galore. No one wears crowns in my country. So clever, I muse. Not all crowns are worn where people can see. He smirks, refusing to rise to the bait. Either his temper is extraordinary, or somehow this man is truly without a lust for power. It's the former, of course. No person on earth can ignore the lure of a throne. Uphold your end of the bargain, and it will be quick, the older man says, backing away. Board him, he adds, his voice harder in command. The guards move as one, well-trained, and if I shut my eyes, I could pretend they were sentinels, my own silver protectors, oathed to keep me safe, instead of these rats and blood traitors bent on keeping me chained. At least they don't bother with manacles. My wrists remain unbound, albeit bare. No bracelets, no flame. No sparks that I can make. Lucky, then, that we're traveling with a lightning girl. I managed to catch a glimpse of her as I marched forward, over the runway to the airjet idling ahead. She clusters with her friend, the Farley woman, who was so easily misled a year ago, as well as her fellow Electricon, the white-haired man. Odd hair must be a style in Montfort, because there's a woman with blue locks and a man with closely cut green hair as well. Mare smiles at them, a true grin. When she moves, I realize her hair is different too. The gray ends are gone, replaced by a beautiful, familiar purple. I love it. I feel a tug deep in my chest. She's on my jet, probably to keep an eye on me, to let her torturer friend stand over me for the entire flight. That's fine. I'll suffer it. A few hours of fear are worth the dwindling time we have left. Our jet has dark green wings, a symbol of the Montfort fleet. I'm led up and into a military craft lined with seats, plus a lower compartment running the length of the fuselage, for more passengers or arms, maybe both. My mouth turns sour as I realize this jet is Montfort-made, and certainly not the only one. The strange mountain country is better equipped than we realized, even after Corvium. After Harbor Bay, and they are mobilizing. As I'm strapped into my seat, the buckles fastened just a hair too tight, I realize why Davidson was laughing. The jets on the runway, the soldiers assembled outside. They're just the beginning. How many thousands are you leading into Archeon? I ask aloud, letting my voice carry over the bustle of the filling compartment. I'm ignored, and that's answer enough. Across the jet, Mare takes her own seat with Farley at her side. The pair of them glance at me, eyes hard as flint, and just as easy to spark. I fight the urge to wag my fingers at them. Then a body crosses my vision, blocking the two women out. I heave a sigh and look up slowly. So predictable. Try something, the white-haired Electricon says. Instead, I shut my eyes and lean back. Shan't, I reply, doing my best to hide how difficult it is to breathe against these infernal belts. He doesn't move, even when the jet roars into the air. So I keep my eyes shut, and I run through my precarious plan. Again and again and again.
32. Evangeline. It's been at least 2 weeks since Barrow left, a week since my betrothed was crowned king, and a few days since I saw Elaine last. I can still feel her, though, her pale skin smooth and cool beneath my fingers. But she is far, far beyond my reach. Dispatched back to the ridge, away from the danger. Cal would have let me keep her here if my father had allowed it. In spite of everything, an understanding is falling into place between us. Funny, I used to dream of such a thing. A king who left me to my own devices and my own crown. Now it's the best I can hope for, and a prison all the same. It traps us both, locking us away from the ones we care about most. He can't bring back Mare, and I won't bring Elaine back. Not with the Lakelander queens on the horizon, and an invasion imminent. I won't risk her life for a few days of my own comfort. My new rooms in Whitefire Palace are meant for the Queen, and they still echo with the presence of Iris Signet. Everything is blue, 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 from the curtains to the plush carpets, even down to the flowers wilting in an obscene amount of crystal vases. With fewer servants, the process of clearing the rooms is slow-going. I end up ripping down most of the curtains myself. They're still in the salon outside my bedroom, collecting dust in a pile of cobalt blue silk. The long balcony overlooking the river is the only respite from her. The distant princess who will return to kill us all. And even here, standing with my face to the sun, I can't escape the thought of the Signet nymph. The capital river courses below, splitting the city of Archaon in two as it winds toward the sea. I try to ignore the rush of water, calm as it is. I focus on braiding my hair instead, pulling the silver strands back from my face. The simple act is a good distraction. The tighter the braids, the more severe, the more determined I feel. I plan to train a little this morning, go through the motions, run the barracks track, maybe spar with Ptolemus if he wants. I find myself wishing Barrow were here. She's a good workout and a good challenge, and easier to deal with than my mother. I'm surprised she hasn't breezed in yet, as she often does these days, trying to prod me toward more queenly activities, as she puts it. But I don't have the stomach to charm or intimidate nobles today, especially for her benefit. My parents want me to sway more silvers, earn the loyalty they pledged to Cal, to pull allies away from him, like saving rats from a sinking ship. Mother and father want me to be his queen the way Iris was Maven's, a snake in his bed, a wolf at his side, gathering strength and waiting for an opportunity to strike. Even though I do not care for Cal, and never could, somehow it feels wrong. But if Annabelle and Julian play out their scheme, I have no idea where that leaves me. Suspended on a bridge, trapped in the middle, with both ends on fire. The bridge. My hands drop, leaving half my hair undone, and I squint at the massive structure spanning the river. The other side of Archaon gleams beneath the rising sun, its many buildings crowned with steel and bronze birds of prey. Nothing seems amiss. It's still busy with transports and a roving populace. So is the bridge, all three levels of it bustling with traffic. Less than usual, but that's to be expected. It's the supports below that worry me, and the water breaking around them. Still steady, moving at the same speed. But the current, the wash of white breakwater at each base. The river is flowing the wrong way. And it's rising. I fly through my bedchamber and the adjoining rooms, seeing nothing until I reach Ptolemus's quarters. The locked door unlatches without a thought, blowing back on twisted hinges as I sprint through. I barely hear myself shout his name. The buzzing in my head is far too loud, overwhelming everything but the cold, acid rush of adrenaline. He stumbles out into the sitting room toward me, half-dressed. I catch a glimpse of rumpled bedsheets through the door behind him, as well as a blue-black arm. It moves, pulling out of sight, as Ren Skonos busies herself with her clothes. "What is it?" my brother asks, his eyes wide with panic. I want to run. I want to scream. I want to fight. The invasion.
"How could they do this? Move their army without us knowing?"
Ptolemus dogs at my heels, barely keeping pace as we stalk through the palace halls. Galleries, salons, receiving chambers, and even ballrooms blur at the edge of my vision. In a few hours, it could all be destroyed, burned or drowned or simply erased. For a moment, I see my brother's corpse, broken and sprawled across the intricate marble floor, his blood like a mirror. I blink, fighting off the thought. Bile rises in my mouth anyway. I glance back at him, alive and breathing, towering in his armor, if only to convince myself he's still here. Ren follows, her healer's uniform clearly marked. I hope they stayed together over the next few hours. I would tie her to him if I could. We had eyes on their citadels, I mutter, speaking to keep myself focused. We knew the Lakelands were gathering for something, but not when. Ren's voice is slow and steady, but not soothing. They must have gone north, moved overland.
Without the Scarlet Guard, we don't have many eyes left in the Lakelands.
Ptolemus curses as we round another corner, angling for the throne room. Our parents haven't found us yet, and that can only mean they're with the king and his advisors. They must already know. Laralan guards open the doors for us, putting their lethal hands to the tall lacquered panels. We march past together, the three of us keeping a tight formation on the off chance the Lakelanders have already infiltrated the city. My ability buzzes, flung wide to catch any errant bullets. I count the rounds in the guards' guns, letting them hang at the edge of my perception as we cross the floor. At the raised platform containing Cal's throne, as well as the seats for his uncle and grandmother, the royals collect. Mother and father are here, with the latter armored as usual. Sunlight flashes off him with every small movement, and he is almost blinding to look at. Mother is more subdued, without armor, but not without weapons. Laurentia Viper has abandoned her beloved panther for now, despite its prowess as a hunter. Instead, she has two shaggy wolves sitting at her heels, their eyes, ears, and snouts all twitching. Both are fearsome to behold, but just as skilled at detection as they are at fighting. No one will catch my mother unawares with them at her disposal. Julian Jacos and Queen Annabelle flank Cal. She is more prepared for battle than the singer uncle, her small, thick form belted into a flame-orange uniform, sculpted by snug body armor. Her hands are bare, even of her wedding ring. Julian is not so protected. His eyes are ringed by dark shadows, hinting at a night with no sleep. He remains close to his nephew, standing only a few inches away. I'm not sure who is more protective of who. The King of Norta himself has burnished red and silver armor, not to mention a gun on one hip and a gleaming sword buckled to the other. No cloak or cape drapes across his shoulders. It would only get in the way. Cal is barely a man, but he seems to have aged overnight, and not from the impending battle. He is no stranger to war or bloodshed. Something else hangs on his heart, something even an invasion can't distract from. He raises his shadowed face, watching me as I approach. "How long do we have?" I ask aloud, not bothering with pleasantries. Cal is quick to answer.
"The air fleet is on the wing,"
he says, casting his gaze to the south.
"There's a storm out to sea, moving too quickly. I'd wager there's a Lakelander armada inside it."
It's a tactic we used ourselves in the Battle of Harbor Bay, but in far fewer numbers and with much less strength. I shudder to think of what a nymph-born assault might look like with the Queen of the Lakelands herself leading the charge. As before, I picture myself swathed in my steel, sinking quickly through deep and dark water, never to surface again. I try not to let that fear bleed into my voice. Their objective? It's the best way to fight, and fight back. Identify what your opponent is trying to do, and calculate how best to stop them. Behind Cal, his uncle shifts uncomfortably. He lowers his eyes, touching his nephew on the shoulder.
"That would be you, my boy. They get to you, and all this is finished before we have even begun."
My father remains silent, weighing the outcomes. What it means for him if Cal is captured or dies. We still aren't married. The Kingdom of the Rift is not so irrevocably tied to Norda, just as we weren't tied to Maven. The last time enemy forces attacked Archaon, House Samos was prepared, and we fled. Will he do the same again? I grip my teeth, already feeling a headache form on top of everything else.
"Maven's escape train is still in use," Julian continues.
In reply, Cal shifts smoothly out of his grasp.
"We can get you out of the city, at least."
The young king pales, his skin turning the color of old bone. The suggestion makes him sick.
And surrender the capital?
Julian responds quickly.
Of course not. We'll defend her, and you'll be well out of danger far beyond their grasp.
Cal's retort is just as quick and twice as resolute, not to mention predictable.
I'm not running.
His uncle doesn't seem surprised.
Still, he tries to argue valiantly.
And in vain.
Cal, I'm not going to let others fight while I hide.
The old queen is more forceful, seizing him by the wrist. I despair of this family bickering but have little recourse, even as the clock ticks against us.
You're not a prince anymore, or a general, Annabel pleads. You are the king, and your well-being is integral to—
As with his uncle, Cal gently extricates himself from her grip, peeling off her fingers and removing her hand. His eyes smolder and burn.
If I abandon this city, I abandon any hope of ever being a king. Don't let your fear blind you to that.
Sick of this nonsense, I cluck my tongue and say the obvious, if only to save precious time.
The remaining high houses will never swear to a king who flees.
I lift my chin, utilizing all my court training to project the image of strength I need. And the ones who have will never respect him.
Thank you, Cal says slowly.
I point one finger at the windows, toward the cliffs. The river has changed course, and it's rising, high enough to allow their largest ships to come this far upriver. Cal nods, grateful for the return to the subject. He shifts, putting some distance between himself and his relatives, crossing to my side.
They intend to split the city in two,
he says, looking between my still-silent father and his own grandmother.
I've already given orders to even the guards on either side of the city and supplement with the soldiers still in our service.
Ptolemus wrinkles his nose.
Wouldn't it be better to gather our strength, fortify the square and the palace, keep ourselves united?
My brother is a warrior as much as Cal is, but no strategist. He is all brutal strength, and Cal is quick to point out his error.
The Signet Queens will feel out which side is weakest,
he says.
If both sides are balanced, they won't find a weaker side to prey on, and we can pin them in the river.
Concentrate the air fleet over the city.
It isn't a suggestion, but an order, and no one shoots me down. Despite our impending doom, I feel a surge of pride.
Use their weapons on the ships. If we can sink one downriver, we'll slow their pace.
A dark grin plays on my lips. Even nymphs can't keep a ship full of holes afloat. There is no joy in Tiberius Calor when he speaks next, his eyes flickering with some inner torment.
Turn the river into a graveyard.
A graveyard for both kinds of blood, silver and red. Lakelanders, soldiers of Piedmont, enemies. That's all they are. Faceless, nameless, sent to kill us. It's an easy equation to balance, with the people I love on one side. Still, my stomach turns a little, though I'll never admit it to anyone. Not even Elaine. What color will the river be when all this is over?
We'll be outnumbered on the ground.
Cal begins to pace, his words taking on a manic quality. He's almost talking to himself, puzzling out a battle plan before our eyes.
And whatever their storms cook up will keep most of the air fleet busy.
My father still hasn't spoken a word.
They'll have red soldiers among the silvers,
Julian says. He sounds almost apologetic. Again my stomach churns, and Cal seems to feel the same trepidation. He falters a little in his steps. Annabel merely scoffs.
That's one advantage at least. Their numbers are more vulnerable and less dangerous.
The rift between Cal's closest advisors yawns like a canyon. Julian almost sneers at her, his usually calm manner fading a little.
That's not what I mean.
More vulnerable, less dangerous. Annabel isn't wrong, but not for the reason she thinks.
The Lakelands haven't eased their treatment of Reds, I say. Norda has.
The withered stare from the old queen is a thing of lethal beauty.
So?
I speak slowly, like I'm explaining battle theory to a child. It rankles her delightfully. So, the Lakelander Reds might be less willing to fight. They might even want to surrender to a country where they'll be given better treatment. Her eyes narrow, as if we can rely on that. I shrug with a practiced smirk, raising the steel pauldrons on both shoulders. They did in Harbor Bay. It's worth keeping in mind. The bug-eyed looks of the Silvers around me are not difficult to interpret. Even Ptolemus is perplexed by what I'm saying. Only Cal and Julian seem open to the idea, their expressions measured but oddly thoughtful. My gaze lingers on Cal, and he meets my eyes firmly, inclining his head in a small, almost invisible nod. He licks his lips, vaulting into another round of planning.
We don't have any new blood teleporters, but if we can somehow get you two, he gestures to Ptolemus and me, onto the battleships again, neutralize their guns.
My children will do no such thing.
Volo's voice is low but resounding, almost vibrating on the air. I feel it in my chest, and suddenly I'm a little girl again, cowering before a commanding father, willing to do whatever I must to keep him happy. To win a rare smile or show of affection, however small. Don't, Evangeline. Don't let him do that. My fist clenches at my side, nails digging into the flesh of my palm. It grounds me somehow. The sharp pain brings me back to who I am, and the cliff we all stand upon. Cal glares openly at my father, the two of them locked in a silent battle of wills. Mother remains quiet, one hand resting on the head of a wolf. Its yellow eyes stare up at the young king, never wavering from his face. My parents don't intend to fight at all, or let us do it either. In Harbor Bay, they were willing to send us into the fighting, risk us both, for victory. They think this battle is already lost. They are going to run. Father speaks again, breaking the tense silence.
My own soldiers and guards, my surviving cousins of House Samos, are yours, Tiberius, but my heirs are not yours to gamble with.
Cal grits his teeth. He plants his hands on his hips, thumbs drumming.
And what about you, King Volo? Will you sit back as well?
I blink, stunned. He all but called the King of the Rift a coward. A shudder runs through my mother's wolf, mirroring her anger. My father has his own schemes already working. He must, or else he wouldn't let the slight pass so easily. With a wave of his hand, he brushes off the accusation.
I don't have to buy loyalty with my own blood, he says simply, jabbing back. We'll be here, defending the square. If the Lakelanders strike the palace, they'll find quite the opposition.
Cal grinds his teeth, gnashing them together, a habit he'll have to break if he ever hopes to hold a throne. Kings shouldn't be so easily read. His uncle looms close at his shoulder, his own watery eyes alight as he stares. At father. Almost smiling, Julian opens his mouth, lips parting to draw in a long, threatening breath. I expect my father to drop his gaze, break eye contact, take away the singer's weapon. But then that would be an admission of fear. He would never do that, even to protect his own mind. It's a standoff.
Is that wise, Jacos?
My mother purrs, and the wolves at her knees growl in response. Julian merely smiles. The sharp thread of tension snaps.
I don't know what you mean, Your Majesty, he says, his voice blissfully normal. No haunting melody, no aura of power.
But Cal, if I can get to the Lakelander Queen, I could be of some use, he adds softly. Not for some part of the pageantry. It isn't an act to send a message. It's an actual proposition. True pain crosses Cal's face. He turns, forgetting my parents.
That's a little more than suicide, Julian, he hisses. You won't even get close to her.
The old singer just raises an eyebrow.
And if I do? I could end this. Nothing will end.
Cal slices a hand in dismissal, and I swear I can almost hear the air singe. His eyes are wide, desperate, all masks of propriety sliding away.
You can't sing both Senra and Iris out of this war. Even if you manage to make them both drown themselves or turn their entire army around, they'll just come back. Another Signet waits in the Lakelands.
It could buy us valuable time.
The uncle isn't wrong, but Cal won't hear of it.
And it will lose us a valuable person.
Julian lowers his eyes, stepping back.
Very well.
This is all very touching. I can't help but mutter. My dear brother mirrors my sentiment. I'm surprised his eyes don't roll out of his head. That aside, do we know what we're going to be facing out there?
Our mother scoffs in reply. Like father, she thinks this battle is already hopeless, the city already lost.
Besides the full might of the Lakelands, red legions with all the silvers they can muster, not to mention powerful nymphs with a river to wield, and perhaps some might of Norda, too. I tap a finger against my lip. I'm not the only one who thinks this. I can't be. It's too obvious. Judging by the flushes on the faces around me, the others realize what I'm saying, and they've had the same suspicions. The high houses missing from your coronation. None have come to pledge loyalty. None have responded to your commands. Cal's throat bobs. A silver blush blooms high on his cheeks.
Not while Maven lives. They still kneel to another king.
They knelt to another queen, I muse. His face falls, dark brows pulling together.
You think Iris has Norton's on her side?
I think she'd be stupid not to try. I shrug my shoulders. And Iris Signet is anything but stupid. The implication hangs over us, thick as a fog, and just as difficult to ignore. Even father seems unsettled by the possibility of another split within the Norton kingdom, cleaving apart a land he one day hopes to control. Annabelle shifts, uneasy down to her toes. She runs a hand across the tight pull of her gray hair, smoothing down an already severe style. The old woman mutters under her breath.
I didn't think it was possible, but I think I miss those grubby reds. A bit late for that.
Cal snarls, his voice like furious thunder. My father's lip twitches, the closest he's ever come to flinching. Of course, there are plans in place, tactics and strategies for defending the capital against an invasion. After a century of war with the Lakelanders, it would be foolish to think otherwise. But whatever the Kalor kings cooked up to fight the Signet nymphs relied on things that no longer exist. A Norton army at full strength. A country united. Tech towns operating at full capacity, churning out electricity and ammunition. Cal can't count on any of it. The barracks and military facilities adjoining the square are the safest place outside the spiraling vaults of the treasury, but I don't fancy burying myself below ground with only a rickety train to rely on. My parents take up refuge in the nerve center of War Command, overseeing the many reports flooding in from the circling air fleet. I suspect King Volo enjoys standing in a place of such power, especially while Cal is readying himself to lead a battalion into the fray. I'm less inclined to stare at printouts and grainy footage, watching battle from afar. I'd rather trust my own eyes, and I can't be close to my parents right now. Somehow the approaching army, the ships hidden on a cloudy horizon, make my choices very clear. Ptolemus sits with me, perched on the steps of War Command. His armor ripples slightly, still taking shape across the planes of his muscles, trying to find the perfect fit. He inclines his head skyward, eyes roving over the gathering gray clouds overhead. They thicken with every passing minute. Ren is close by too, hovering at his shoulder, her hands bare and ready to heal.
It's going to rain, he says with a sniff. Any second now.
Ren looks past us, toward the bridge of Archeon on the far side of the square gates. Its many arches and supports seem faded as the oncoming mist bleeds into the city.
I wonder how high the river is now, she murmurs. I reach out with my ability, trying to distinguish the armada rapidly closing the miles. But the ships are still too far out, or I'm too distracted. Father is going to run again. House Samos will run. Leave Norda to crumble with only the rift remaining, an island against the lapping Signet seat. Eventually we'll be overrun too. Queen Senra has no sons, no one to sell me to. Volo Samos has no more bargains left to make. He'll have to surrender, and die at her hands, probably, the way Solon did, if he even survives today. So where does that leave me? If my father faces defeat as much as my betrothed does, I think it leaves me free. Tali, do you love me? Both Ren and my brother snap to attention, their faces whirling to mine. Ptolemus almost sputters, his lips flapping with surprise. Of course, he says, almost too quickly to be understood. His silver brows furrow, and something like anger crosses his features. How can you even ask that? Just the simple question offends him, wounds him. It would do the same to me. I take his hand, squeezing tight, feeling the bones in the newly grown appendage he lost some months ago. I sent Elaine away from the ridge. When you get home, she won't be there. Red hair, a mountain breeze. It seems like a dream. Could it be real? Is this my chance?
Eve, what are you talking about? Where?
I'm not going to tell you, so you won't have to lie. Slowly, I force myself to stand on oddly shaking limbs, a baby learning to walk, taking steps for the first time. I quiver all over, toes to fingertips. Ptolemus jumps up with me, bending so we're eye to eye, inches away from each other. His hands are tight on my shoulders, but not enough to keep me in place if I choose to move. I'm going inside. I need to ask him a question, I murmur. But I think I already know the answer. Eve. I look into his eyes, the same eyes as mine, as our father's. I would ask for his help, but splitting him apart like that, asking him to choose a side? I love my brother, and he loves me, but he loves our parents, too. He is a better heir than I ever was. Don't follow me. Still trembling, I pull him into a crushing hug. He returns the gesture reflexively, but he stumbles over his words, unable to understand what I'm saying. I don't look back for what could be my last glimpse of my brother's face. It's too difficult. He could die today, or tomorrow, or a month from now, when the Signet Queens storm my home to lay my family bare. I want to remember his smile, not a confused frown. War Command is a mess. A study in chaos. Silver officers buzz through passages and chambers, calling out developments and army movements. The Lakelander boats, the Piedmont air jets, it all passes in a blur. My parents are easy to find. My mother's wolves guard the door to one of the communications chambers, flanking each side with bright, keen eyes. The beasts turn to me in unison, neither hostile nor friendly as I pass. Static-filled screens fill the command room with a crackling glow of shifting light. Only a few are still operational. Not a good sign. The air fleet must be well into the storm, if it even still exists. Volo and Laurentia stand firm, mirror images of each other, postures violently straight, unblinking as they take in such dire circumstances. On one of the screens, the first Armada ship takes shape, a hulking shadow obscured by mist. Others slowly come into focus, at least a dozen, and still more. I've seen this room before, but never so empty. A skeleton crew of silver officers mans the screens and radios, trying to keep up with the flood of information. Runners bustle in and out, taking the newest items with them. Probably to Cal, wherever he is now. Father? I sound like a child, and he dismisses me like one.
Evangeline, not now.
What happens when we go home? With a sneer, he looks over his shoulder. Father cut his hair shorter than usual, cropping the silver close to his scalp. It gives him a skullish look.
When this war is won.
I let him parrot the lie, feeling myself tighten as he spouts nonsense. You'll be queen, peaceful reign, life will return to what it was. Lies. All of it. What happens to me?